And in 3, 2, and 1. This week in Geek.
This Week in Geek, we discuss GTA 6, cross promotions, and live events.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to another Week in Geek with the Geeks Every Week, which are me and Kevin, obviously, unless we have a special guest, which I need to reach out to our next one. Speaking of, though, Kevin, before we continue, I'll get into it later, actually. But how have you been this week before I interrupt my train of thought and my flow, which we always do every week?
It's all good. I got a job. That's what happened.
Congrats.
It kind of came at me a little, like, really quick. I essentially had an interview last Monday, the 27th, and we usually record the podcast that day, right?
Mm-hmm.
We recorded the podcast, and then the day after, I got a text from the place that I interviewed at, and they're like, "Hey, are you willing to start on Friday?" And I'm like, "Sure, I guess." So, I am a shift manager at an escape room now. Hey. That's cool. So, couldn't escape the escape rooms. The escape rooms don't escape me. So, that's just how it is.
Well, just think, Kevin, you'll never be able to be trapped. No one can ever trap you because you know how to get out of everything.
I know the puzzles now. I understand. You can, if there is a logical way out, if you give me a logical way out, I will find it.
You're going to be the next Houdini. Just watch.
It's just going to be so weird. It'll be like, it'll be another, it'll be Saw like 18 or something. And they'll be like, on this one, you have to figure it out. And I'll be like, yeah, they're using an RFID switch on this part. So, you know, if you count backwards, you'll get the right answer here.
Doesn't work in the modern day because we do escape rooms for fun.
Yeah.
That's just going to be his whole thing now, is that he
got crafty and he made more than one puzzle this time. So,
or he gives up his quest for vengeance and just makes a shit ton of money doing escape rooms.
There you go. But yeah, I started on Friday. And essentially, I played through all the games on Friday. I had like formal training on Saturday, lots of paperwork Sunday. And then, yeah, I worked on Tuesday. It was like the first time I had to like open up the shop on my own. And yeah, we're just getting into the swing of it. It's exciting to be in a smaller escape room. There's not a lot of like corporate policy that we have to follow here, which is pretty nice. Like, one of the things is like, I don't have to come in every day in uniform. Mm-hmm. You could come in anything casual. It's located really close to where I live, but not like super close, but like in the general area. It's a little bit of a trek. It's further away than my previous escape room, but like, it's in the heart of the city, so it's kind of fun to be there. Just a lot of getting used to puzzles and the workflow of everything. But yeah, that's what I've been up to. Just
how does
back
this escape
in the
room compare to your other one?
So the other one was very much a corporate job. You could tell because there's like a lot of not only policy, but like they have a lot more space to work with. But the thing that I like about the new escape rooms that I'm at is that because they're smaller, there's a lot more, like everything in the room has a purpose. It is not like they have space to like throw something that does absolutely nothing at you throughout the game. Like everything that you find in the room that can move is essentially a part of a puzzle. And
okay,
like it's not the best way how I could describe it is like the other escape room that I used to work at had a lot of space where like you could walk around and you can easily get lost in there just because there's possibly things that could lead you down doing nothing, right? Not like surprisingly crazy red herrings, but like there are moments where you'll just, yeah, there's a lot of distractions in the room. In this one, it's like, oh, I found a key. Where does it go? It's like, well, there's only like two other locks in the room, so it's got to work on one of them, right? And then you go from there, you solve that, and then you're like, everything essentially funnels into a final puzzle. And everything like has a certain flow to it, which is really cool. The other thing that I like is there are a lot of puzzles that use very interesting mechanics. For example, I've never thought of using a light beam as a way of like trying to trigger an RFID switch. In other words, like, you know how your garage door, if you stick your leg out, it like it will stop the garage door from closing on your leg, right?
Yeah, so you don't lose a limb.
Yeah, essentially they have puzzles like that where if you break essentially this beam, it triggers a different event, which like essentially makes the room harder. So like if you try to like shortcut or bypass something, it makes it like harder for you, which which I genuinely do like. So yeah, I did that on my first run. It's just a matter of like, oh, okay, well, like obviously the thing is right here, but you're supposed to get it, but it does make the game harder for you from that point forward. So I like that. And each room has like a little bit more of like a focus to it. That's the best way I could describe it. But yeah, instead of me having to manage six rooms or seven rooms at a time, we only have to manage four. They're pretty quick in terms of like resetting and learning everything, and it does help that I was at a previous escape room prior, because now I know like what I like and what works best for me and things that I could change and help out groups with, you know.
Okay,
but yeah, it's a lot of fun. I really do enjoy being in that environment and like essentially helping people out with puzzles and having fun with like being in those kinds of scenarios, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I you have direct pre-earned applicable experience.
Yeah. How about you, Matt? How was your week? How's everything going?
It's been okay. Today was our first meeting for the new play. I mean, it's called Done to Death and it's a murder mystery. I'm playing like the youngest of the writers in this, because it's like a bunch of writers are like called together to like create the greatest mystery TV show novel thing in the world, and then their producer ends up murdered, so they have to figure out like how their producer gets murdered, and I think some of them also die too, but I haven't read the play. I'm reading through it on Saturday. I also beat this new Spider-Man game. It's good. The last act is really surprisingly very, very long. I did not expect that last act to be as long as it was. But in spite of that, I think the game is very short. I expected it to be a lot longer, but there was a lot of news already that came out when the game first released about how it wasn't as big and there weren't as many side missions as people thought it was going to be. I do feel like the very first Spider-Man game that they came out with is probably the biggest one, followed by this and then Miles Morales. I still like Miles Morales the most. I don't know why. It's a glorified DLC, but it's fun as hell. I've been playing a little bit more of Pikmin 4, which is great. This is my first Pikmin game ever, and I'm enjoying it a lot. I started playing Batman Gotham Knights, or it's not even called Batman anymore. It's just called Gotham Knights because Batman's dead in it. I played like the tutorial mission and it got a lot of shit when it came out, and I feel like it deserves all of it. It feels bad. Like, you know how Spider-Man copied the framework? Pretty much every game has copied the framework of how to like do combat in Batman since Batman, right? Like square to hit, triangle to counter, circle for something else, and then X to like dodge, right?
Yeah.
They went and they did something different with this game. I don't know why. It's like press X for square to like hit, and then hold square for heavy hit, and then triangle for throwing projectile, and then hold triangle for heavy projectile, and I don't know. It feels bad. I don't like it. I'm gonna see how long I can last with it. I don't think it's gonna be very long. Now looking back on it, and that one experience I had with the voice actor of Robin when I told him that the game looked like it sucked to his face accidentally, I don't regret that anymore. I'm just hoping that Kill the Justice League is going to be a better game than this, because this was supposed to be a live service game, and then they kind of pivoted on it, and you can tell that it's not what they wanted it to be. So we'll see how that goes. I also saw the new Godzilla movie, which was really surprisingly very good. It's definitely the scariest Godzilla's ever been, and you can like really feel the tension. You know how like a lot of the older Godzilla movies, Kevin, and especially like even with the first of the new reboots, they like wait to the very end to show you Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
This one, like, he's in it within the first 5 minutes, and it's just as scary as when he's like at the very end still destroying shit. It's great. It's a really it also makes you actually care about the humans in this, which the newer like Monarch Warner Brothers Apple version of Godzilla, they're just trying so hard to make you care about the people, but they you don't. I don't care about Millie Bobby Brown. I really don't. But this is the Toho Studios did a really good job with a good story, and it's like it goes back to the roots of Godzilla, where it's like talking about the war trauma and like the nuclear warfare fears and everything about that. So it's so good. Kevin, how much do you know about like Japanese movies and television, like the acting styles over there? Because I have a question.
Oh, I know a little bit. I wouldn't say that I'm like a master or an expert at it, but
okay.
Like I don't know what goes into like specifically Godzilla and stuff like that, but okay. I mean, I had to study like Kurosawa during my time, so I feel like that's somewhat
Kurosawa
applicable.
Kurosawa was another level though.
Yeah.
Kurosawa was like the GOAT. But from what you know, is it common for like the Japanese style of acting and the Japanese technique of acting to be kind of both overacting and like overly expressive, but also kind of like wooden and empty at the same time?
Yeah, I get what you're saying in terms of that. Yeah, there are moments where characters where like it feels like it should be deep, but it's really like not super super there, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It, like I don't know, it's just kind of like this passive
off, but it doesn't
like a passive
feel like they
style.
Believe it. Yeah, it's very passive. It's like they're acting because they know they're supposed to be and it's their job, but they don't believe the emotion of the scene.
Yeah.
They're very much doing a job.
Yeah.
Okay. Cause that's how the acting is in this. Like, in spite of like how good the story is written, the acting is of that style and caliber. Doesn't take away from the overall experience. It's just a note that I had. It's like, oh, it would have been better if had they like actually believed that they were angry at Godzilla instead of just yelling into oblivion. But I'd highly recommend it if you haven't seen it, or if any of you are going to try to see it, go do it. It's good. It's fantastic. Another thing before we actually get into the real news of the week is, I finally got my Outlaws jersey today. It's the staple one from when we covered that back when they first released them. It's kind of, it feels like this meshy kind of fabric. It feels like a real jersey as opposed to like the season one jerseys, which were kind of this synthetic-y kind of fabric that felt stretchy and not slippery, but it felt very smooth, like silk-ish, but not quite silk. I'm not a big fan of the material of that. I just got that jersey because I was at Blizzard Arena and it was my first time doing that, and I wanted a jersey. But this one feels very like, this is what a jersey should feel like. This is like, feels very good quality. I got it for half off. Yeah, I got it for about like 30-ish bucks, which is half of what, because they were doing a sale because the Overwatch League is dead. But the interesting thing is, and I've shown you this, Kevin, but there's these weird zippers on the side that you unzip them and it expands the shirt and it shows the logo of the team. I don't know why they're there. I don't know if this is just an aesthetic choice or if you're like a little extra fat and you don't need a bigger size up, but you're a little too fat for the shirt. It's the fat zipper is what I'm going to call that right now. So
yeah, it was just kind of weird how it's just off to the side, but
yeah, it's like it can be functional again if you had a very large meal at KBBQ and you feel your stomach a bit distended, you can use it to like relieve some of that pressure. But I don't know, it's a weird thing. Kevin, do you know also just a real quick thing before we another thing, do you know casters for Valorant of the EU scene?
Not a ton.
Do you know who Ember is?
Not off the top of my head, no.
Okay. Because apparently, like, his dad is in the cast with me in this new play. And apparently this kid, like, got a job casting for Valorant right out of high school. And they shipped him off to, like, the EU scene to cover it there. And I think he's finally coming back to the US to do casting or playtesting or stuff with them. So his dad's like... Oh, because I introduced myself today, and one of the things I said was that I used to be on a minor league competitive esports team known as the Zomniks, and we were technically 2-time world champions. Technically, I see. And he came up to me afterwards, like, "Oh, what esport did you do?" And then he talked to me about that. So, his dad suggested that we bring him on to the podcast at some point. We'll see. We'll see how that goes. I still have to contact Risa and see if she wants to talk to us. I can also contact the voice actor of Robin, who I insulted, and see if he wants to come on the show with us after I told him to his face that his game fucking sucks. But that's neither here nor there. Let's get into the news. Kevin, do you know what the word of the year is according to the Oxford English Dictionary?
Not off the top of my head. Word of this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it Riz?
It is Riz.
Okay.
It is Riz. Which I kind
of... Alex, I will take Riz for 200, please.
So last year, it was Goblin Mode. 2021, it was Vax. I'm looking back. 2014, it was Vape.
That's wild.
2013 was Selfie. 2017 was Youthquake. 2018 was Toxic. Oh, God. I don't like that. I don't like any of those. But Riz, it's short for charisma, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it means style, charm, or attractiveness. The ability to attract a romantic or sexual partner. The word Riz can also be used as a verb. Often in the phrase to riz up, which means to attract, seduce, or chat up a person.
That is true. I can attest to that one.
Apparently, the usage of the word dramatically increased and peaked in June 2023 when actor Tom Holland was asked in an interview about his riz, to which he answered, "I have no riz whatsoever. I have limited riz," which I find hard to believe because he's Spider-Man and he's romantically involved with Zendaya.
Yeah. You can't not have Riz. You're Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. You have Riz.
He had enough Riz to get that goddamn role, which I... Come on. Come on, Tom Holland. You've got Riz. Other finalists this year were Prompt, as in like a prompt you give to an AI, a program to influence the content it generates. Situationship, which is a romantic or sexual relationship that is not considered formal or established, which looking back on it, I guess that's what Holly and I had. It was a situationship because it wasn't, we never formally were like, oh, we're together, and then she broke it off.
I wouldn't have been surprised if situationship was the word of this year, because I've heard that quite a bit more.
Mm-hmm. See, this next one I think would have been even bigger. Swifty, an enthusiastic fan of the singer Taylor Swift. I thought that would, I think that, like,
I mean, this was her year to get that term.
I mean,
too.
If she didn't win it this year, I don't think she's, unless she does something even bigger than the Eras Tour, I don't think she can capture that magic again.
Yeah.
She can't riz up the Oxford English Dictionary a second time, or can she?
There you go.
Oh God, I hated saying that right there. That felt bad inside. I felt very bad. But you know what doesn't feel bad inside, Kevin? The GTA 6 trailer.
Yeah.
Finally released. It's just Florida Man the game.
Dude, I love watching the side-by-side comparisons of actual Floridians.
Yep.
With the trailer footage. It's just too funny.
Because they based a lot of the trailer on like news footage. Like the Florida Joker. There's that woman with like the two axes. There's the gator that just walks into the convenience store.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if you like look at Florida and you look at like Grand Theft Auto's vision of Vice City for this game, on one hand, if you just looked at the game by itself, it looks like too chaotic and too crazy to be real. But then you see the news footage of actual Florida and it's like, oh no, this is accurate.
Oh, this is accurate. Yeah, this is 100% what it is.
I need to ask my Floridian friends, because some of the Zomniks are from Florida. Like, Andy, Robin, and Kitty are from Florida. So I need to ask them next time we get on, like, how accurate is this to the real-life Floridian experience? Because we know some of them, like, obviously, like, they base the footage, as we said, on real news footage. But on a day-to-day basis, what is life there really like? Another thing about this trailer leak, which we finally got, and it looks so good. It's not coming out until 2025, which is understandable. It's a very big game, and it probably takes a long time to make this, and they're probably going to be milking this for how long have they been milking GTA 5, Kevin? Since like 2013, right? Was when it came out?
Something like that.
So 10 years. So they're going to be milking this game for another 10 years. So like, we'll get it 2025. Then they'll be milking it to 2035 at least 2035. But another thing is that a couple days ago, apparently some footage of the trailer leaked, and it was immediately taken down. And I think the trailer was supposed to come out on the 5th, but they released it early on the 4th. It looks largely because of the leaked footage that came out. It turns out that there is a high likelihood that the person that leaked the footage is the child of someone who works at Rockstar, and it was leaked on their TikTok.
Oh.
So what do you do at that point if you're that kid's dad?
That's a tough one. I would say, if you want to think of it in the best possible light, you hire him as your social media manager.
No. Because, well, I mean, on one hand, it could have been like a staged thing, but it's also like, as someone who's had to deal with these leaks and shit, and like, I'm still dealing with some crisis mode stuff for Squishmallows, but it's like, no, I, it must have been utter hell.
True.
Utter hell dealing with that. Like just the amount of like meetings and back and forth and damage control you have to do. Like, there goes your entire weekend. The weekend that got leaked. No, you don't have a weekend anymore. This is gonna be your life until we do all the damage control. Like, the Squishmallow stuff came out weeks ago. Like, I was on vacation when it came out, and I'm still dealing with it. Like, 3 weeks later. Like, what the hell, guys? So there's that. I wonder if the dad is still with the company, or if he got fired. And if he got like, what does this dad tell his kid every day? It's like, you got me fired because of your stupid TikTok.
Yeah, he's gotta work now.
I can't imagine that family dynamic.
Yeah, that's not looking good for the kid.
And I mean, I think there could even be like legal ramifications there too, because like there's people who like who hack and who like do leaks that are like charged or like are sued by these companies for like breaching trade secrets or espionage or whatever, corporate espionage or whatever they do. But there's a possible like legal case there for Rockstar if they wanted to go that route, which hopefully not, for the kid's sake and for the family's sake. Moving on. Kevin, you know Invincible, right? Have you seen Invincible?
I have seen Invincible, yes.
You would say Omni-Man has a very prominent mustache, correct?
Yes.
Apparently, data miners have found that in Mortal Kombat 1, where Omni-Man was just added as the next playable character, there was cut content that they found through data mining, where one of his brutalities, which if you're not familiar with Mortal Kombat, it's kind of like a fatality, but you don't have to like wait. Like when you traditionally do a fatality in Mortal Kombat, like there's the, you take away all their health bar, and then there's the big finish him. And then you input your button input, and then it does the whole scene. A brutality is kind of like that, but it's, if you do a certain number of, if you fulfill certain conditions, like for example, if it's like forward grab them 3 times throughout the match, and if you're able to do that, and like the last grab is what you kill them with, then it triggers a brutality. One of the brutalities for Omni-Man was supposed to be, he rips off his mustache, throws it at the opponent, and that's how they die.
I mean, he'll grow it back. He's definitely got time.
I mean, he's pretty much immortal.
Yeah.
Just like,
he can do it.
The fact that they thought of this, animated it, then decided, no, we can't do that.
But no,
then
this is
left
too
the files
strong
in there. It was just, I would have loved to be sitting in that board meeting where they're like, all right, what's Omni-Man's brutality going to be? Yo, he tears off his mustache. I like it. Let's go with that.
Let's go. Let's cook with that.
But yeah, I wish that was a real thing, but like, I don't think it's probably coming anytime soon because it cut it. I would love for them to bring it back now that we found it, now that someone else has found it. But maybe NetherRealm's done weirder things. Moving on, Overwatch looks like it might have some changes coming into it to spicy up the gameplay a little bit, because it's getting like they're making changes and I still enjoy playing it. But like games can kind of be meh sometimes if you're not playing on the new modes or if you're not with friends. I'm still not the biggest fan of 5v5. I hate the new Flashpoint mode, which is just pretty much 2CP, but worse, because now it's out of 5 different maps, you have to do 3CP, which is just too much CP.
Mm-hmm.
But the developers were talking with Flats and Emong, lead developer Alec Dawson. They were talking on Twitch, but they were saying that they've been doing some wacky, quote unquote, wacky tests to see how they could change up the game a little bit. Some things that they're thinking of doing is doing a pick ban thing. Like we've talked about it before, as Kevin, like you've mentioned it a lot, as a way to help make sure that there's variety in the games, because that at that point, like the teams picking and banning makes each game different and puts more, I guess, stakes on it, unless you're just picking banning the same characters every time. But another thing is that they could do a thing where it costs some kind of token or in-game currency that is required for you to switch. The quote from Dawson is, here's, we may even be doing some wacky tests that look at, hey, what does swapping mean at the game? Is it something that you need to spend a token for, or is it something that's more of a currency rather than more freeform as it is now? And I don't know what that looks like for Overwatch.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what that would entail either. And it does sound interesting. And I don't know how you would like enforce that either, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think it takes away from the core of what Overwatch is like, even on the box, it says like swap heroes on the fly. But I mean, like in other games, I think like when you use abilities, it's based on like technically a currency or a points thing, right? You have to build up points. So maybe that's kind of what it could be. It's like, depending on your performance, if you need to switch, you can.
Yeah. I don't know if it should be like, I don't know if that's too wacky though, or it doesn't, or it punishes them too hard, but like, what if it costs like ult percentage or something like that to switch?
I mean, it kind of already does.
Like, it already does, and it caps at like 30%, right? But
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what else you would add to it.
But at that point, it kind of punishes strategizing, right? If you need to swap, if you're being hard countered, then what are you supposed to do if you're not at that point of where you have enough of the in-game currency to do it? I don't particularly like that. I think, again, it just betrays what Overwatch was known as the hero shooter that it is.
Yeah.
But if they want to do it as like a challenge mode or as an arcade mode, I would be all for it because it adds something unique to the game, but not as an across-the-board replacement for the game that we have now.
Yeah. I could see that as like an event, but not necessarily like a full-on, like, this is the way how the game is played now.
Mm-hmm. I think you might turn off a lot of people. I think you might make the player base even smaller, which, I mean, according to reports, it's not really gone down. Like, as much as people bitch and moan about the game, they still play it. The Blizzard's internal reporting that they've released has said that, like, player involvement has been steady even after all the changes in Overwatch 2. I don't know if it's growing, but it's not shrinking to the level that, like, people claim that it is, at the very least.
Yeah.
One last Overwatch thing that I forgot to put here is that Uber actually won Shoutcaster of the Year at the Esports Awards, which
it's
bittersweet because Uber is what has always been very good at his job. He's one of the ones that I enjoyed. I think my favorite Shoutcaster is still Achilleos, just because I think he was very clear with his casting, and I just gravitated towards the games that he casted. I don't think Avril, his newer partner, was the best for him. Avril was kind of flat and seemed kind of angry a lot of the time. But I mean, Uber was consistently like very fun, and it's bittersweet that now that the league has ended is when he gets his win. And just looking at, just in general, looking at the casting, I mean, I didn't watch a lot this last season, but looking at the casting talent for the Overwatch League, like, there is, if you ever need to see, like, proof that there is space for women in esports and that women talent can make it, just look at the Overwatch League team there. Like, you had Lemon Kiwi, you had Zoe, you had Necra, you had Vicky Kitty, you had, like, a lot of really good people who did a very good job making the game easy to understand and like accessible for other people. So I don't know. There's still people obviously out there, and we've talked about it before, like even within the Overwatch League, who didn't feel like esports is a place for women, but no, it clearly is. Like, Zoe is one of the most iconic people in esports today, and she did a very good job. So I don't know how you can say that esports is not a place for women. But okay, so for my last topic, Kevin, what do you think about the band Kiss?
Rock band.
So they did this thing where they went on this tour for 4 years. Like, it's their farewell tour, but apparently on their last night of their farewell tour at Madison Square Garden, they announced that they're going to be digitized. Well, they're not going to be. They have digitized themselves as avatars so that the band can live on forever. I don't really like that, because like at this point now, they're not the first band to do this. I think the first band to do this with this certain company that they're going with is Pop House Entertainment, is the band ABBA, which they're known for a variety of hits from back in the day, like Fernando, Chiquitita, just a lot of music. If you don't know ABBA, then I don't know.
Where have you been?
they're an iconic band. They've made so many songs. Like, you have to have heard an ABBA song in the past. I don't know how long you've been alive, but whatever. So ABBA is actually the first band to do this with this company, and their shows have been pulling in $2 million a week. So there's financial precedent for success here, though I personally don't think it's, I don't know. I don't like it because it's just like you're watching a concert movie, and I don't know if they're charging you like concert prices for pretty much watching like music videos the entire time with a bunch of people. Like, I can see if you're charging like movie theater prices, because that's essentially what the Eras Tour is, the Eras Tour movie, and like the Beyonce's Renaissance movie, and like Michael Jackson did, like after he passed away, that there was the This Is It movie. Like, you're watching recorded footage. It's not live. No one's actually performing it. It's stuff that you could technically just like watch at home on YouTube, but now it's in a concert setting. So I don't know what the value really is to doing that. I mean, yes, you're with other fans, but if you're going to be charging like stadium prices with Ticketmaster fees, and I don't know what you're really getting out of that. I don't know if that's justified, you know?
Yeah, I'm on the fence on this, because like I know the two like ideas behind it. One, it's like,
it feels like Vocaloid.
That's exactly what I was saying. Like, it feels like a Hatsune Miku, you know, like concert, but like Kiss is not Hatsune Miku. Like, you're not that guy. I'm sorry.
Is that the next crossover you're Kiss. We can get? Kiss didn't just mean, Christmas. They're now meeting Hatsune Miku.
If Kiss and Hatsune Miku make a Christmas album and it pops off, then yeah, sure. That might justify it. But at the same time, like, Kiss is a band. Like, they are a band. They've you know, lived throughout, you know, their lifetime, right? I don't see the appeal of giving them the Hatsune Miku treatment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause like, would, I don't know if we would even want to have that either. 'Cause like, for example, like, would you want to see like a band that may have been, you know, around like 100 years ago, would you want to still see them perform if you know their entire catalog? Like, would you go to see, like, I feel like this is kind of like a weirder one, but it would be interesting. Would you watch Paul McCartney perform with like versions of the Beatles and recreate a Beatles experience if Paul McCartney is still the only, you know, living member?
Yeah, I feel like that, because I don't like Paul McCartney or the Beatles, but I see where you're going.
Like,
I don't know. I don't think I would.
Interesting. It's not like enough, I think, because like we've heard all their songs already, and we know, and it's appealing to a certain generation, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if Kiss is going to be appealing to generations like after, like, not even us, like, unless you like loved rock music, played like a ridiculous amount of Guitar Hero, you would, but I don't know. I think it's okay in little sporadic like uses if it's used correctly. Like, the one that comes to mind was when Snoop Dogg was performing at Coachella and they brought on the Tupac hologram.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, that was an experience. Right. But that was because it was an experience.
Because it was also so unexpected, too. I think, yes. Wasn't it like one of the first times that that's ever really happened?
Yes. It was the only time that it actually did happen. So I think that's the only reason why it would.
I feel like even if you were to see Kiss now as they are in their old age, like, it's going to seeing their farewell tour, like, part of the appeal is seeing them live, because as a glam rock band, like, part of the experience is seeing these people dressed up and running around the stage and in this kind of ridiculous outfit performing for you live. It's like,
mm-hmm.
The human aspect of art is I think what's central to what makes it worth it. This feels like it's just going again down that rabbit hole of AI stuff, which the whole SAG-AFTRA just waged war with the studios over, and now here's KISS just willingly doing it.
Hmm.
It feels out of touch and just ill-advised to me. But I mean, KISS is the article that I read on The Verge, like, brought up a good point, is that KISS has been selling their image and selling like their themselves as a product for I don't know how long, like, for it's pretty much since the beginning. Just this it just feels so lifeless, but at the same time so on brand for them. But I hope other artists don't go this way. But I mean, this company has, they're using Industrial Light and Magic, which is George Lucas's company, I guess, to create these digital avatars, and they've already got ABBA and KISS. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. they've already proven the concept with ABBA. They've got a second band in there. It's just a matter of time till, who are they going to get next? Black Sabbath? Journey? Queen? I don't like it, but if they're making $2 million a show with ABBA, like, what is their incentive to stop?
Exactly.
Well, that was my last topic, so that's my incentive to stop. Now it's your turn, Kevin. Tell us about the Weeby things and the video game things and all that fun stuff that you know about that I don't.
Yeah, we have quite a bit this week. I had to reference back to the stream to see where we're at, but here we are. First things first, let's talk about the cross promotion. So Street Fighter VI and Spy Family initially had a poster that had your Briar, which is the wife from Spy Family, facing off against Chun-Li.
Oh, I think, and you talked about this before, right?
We talked about the poster.
Yeah, okay.
We didn't know what it was leading to. We're slowly getting closer to the movie, which is Spy Family Code White. That comes out in Japan on the 22nd. So a lot of people are keeping their eyes open for that. That's going to be in Japan probably at the end of the year. We're probably going to get it closer to like February or March. It depends on their turnaround. But the cross promotion does not end at the poster. I put a link to a YouTube video in our notes. But this video showcases the actual animation of your versus Chun-Li.
Huh.
So it's a full-on animated piece where you get to watch yours fighting style versus Chun-Li's like distance fighting style and how they go head to head. People are wondering if this is going to lead to possible skins in the game, or if yours is going to be a like promotional character that may be included in the game. That may be an option. But we were saying everybody, all of my friends are making the joke that if that happens, then Zangief gets a Anya skin, 100%. We've seen the buff
Russian man in the
we've seen the buff Anya meme going around at cons where like the buffest person will just be in an Anya, like have the Anya hair and like the uniform.
So there's precedent there.
Yeah, there's meme ability, and I really do think that it can pop off if they want to do it. I can definitely see it being included if it is something that Capcom and Tatsuya Endo and Shonen Jump can all come to a conclusion about. But
the jiggle physics in this video, they still did it.
they did it with Yor, which is really funny, because like a lot of people were mentioning that, or like even I take note that in Spy Family they really keep that down. It's not like something that's like a massive appeal to a lot of mm-hmm. people. But like, you know, Street Fighter does Street Fighter things, so jiggle physics are real.
Does Street Fighter do a lot of guest characters? So is there a good chance that Yor might come in as a guest character?
They usually don't. And that's the thing. There's been a lot of like cross promotion of not only this, but like also talks of like teaming up with Baki as well as another like grappling anime that might make another appearance, but we don't know if they're gonna do a cross promotion of any sort like this. I can definitely see it as a like a one-off, like maybe an event skin. Like I could see it as a fighter skin, but I don't know if I would include a full character in the game. So that might be the way how they go about it, which I wouldn't be opposed to that at all. Okay, cool. Let's go from cross promotion. Let's talk about some of the bigger, like, kind of esports events that are kind of happening. Let's talk about the funnier one first. So Ludwig usually hosts a tournament at some point for the content creators. 2 years ago, we had the chess boxing tournament, yes, which was freaking insane. I love that. He said that he wasn't going to have it this year. He's done other things throughout the year, but literally, like, I think it was like almost at the beginning of the week, he said, yeah, I'm going to be hosting a content creator dodgeball event this weekend. So apparently he's invited a bunch of content creators. They're going to be playing in a like an 8-team like bracket dodgeball event. And yeah, that's going to be this weekend, somewhere in LA. Let me see if I could find the details of it. But yeah, I don't have the time nor the income to go and do that right now. But I was really interested in seeing how it plays out, because I know that a lot of what is it? I know that a lot of content creators are going to this other event right now. I don't know who is exactly invited to this event. We could see. But the tournament takes place on Sunday, December 10th at 1 p.m. It is, where's the location? It just says Los Angeles. That's like a whole place. You can't just say the place. Is it probably in like USC, like you did for the last tournament? Yeah, not a lot, but they were saying Ludwig has invited Offline TV, Valkyrie, Hassan, Sykuno, and many more. So we will see who shows up. It's going to be on Ludwig's YouTube and is now Twitch channel. He's allowed to come back because of the new streaming laws. So, and YouTube was cool with it. It's under Mogul Moves, so it's not under his. It's not under Ludwig, but it's under like his company, which is allowed to run off the channel. So that's pretty cool.
Speaking of Twitch, I've heard rumors that Twitch is not going to be operating in Korea anymore.
That is true. That is because of a lot of things that are happening in terms of not only how can I describe it, legislation, but also the way how Twitch operates. So in Korea, unlike the US, like we have ISPs, we have internet service providers, you know, the people who provide you the internet and throttle it when you need it most. But they have like a government-wide like network system, right? So essentially like Wi-Fi is free throughout the country. You just need a machine or something that can, you know, route in. And that service is provided for free throughout Korea. In the recent thing with Twitch, Twitch uses a lot of bandwidth. Obviously, like when you're trying to live stream out a signal, when you're trying to, you know, host a server and so on and so forth, it ate up a lot of the country's bandwidth, and it caused a lot of issues in terms of overall performance to everyone. Korea put in a certain legislation that prevented a lot of these bigger streaming sites. But specifically, they like targeted Twitch because they said Twitch uses the most and has the most traffic compared to all the other streaming sites. And Twitch realized like, hey, we can't really fight this legislation that well. And there's no way for them to provide the level of service that they used to. in Korea without having to like without having to work around it like a crazy amount or having to like pay a ton in order to increase the infrastructure in Korea. So instead of that, they decided like, hey, we can't provide the service in Korea anymore, which has sparked a lot of like discussion. Because we as gamers, like obviously like streaming has become a really big career over the course of, you know, I guess over the pandemic, but also just like the way how people make their money through content creation of a way in sort. So they said, unfortunately, Twitch will be shutting down in Korea. So all Korean streamers are freaking out because literally it's literally over the course of like a couple of weeks, they have to pull out of Korea completely. And it's not only stranding a ton of South Korean content creators, but it also like means that people who may have built their like their channel and their community there cannot like continue that and also cannot make the same amount of money performing on Twitch anymore. So a lot of people are saying like you can go to other sites like that. They don't know if with Twitch pulling out, it's going to create everybody moving to Kick, and then it's just going to do the same thing to Kick and same thing to YouTube. Or if it's going to be something else like later down the line as well. But or if, you know, Korean content creators have to move out of South Korea in order to like continue their stream. Yeah, to maintain their stream. And the thing is, a lot of people are like really sad about it. Obviously, like they want to, like all these content creators worked their ass off to get here. It would be really terrible for them to like lose out on their entire audience just because they live in a certain region. But it is tough for them to continue that career with the platform shutting down in their country. Twitch, on the other hand, said like the best thing that they can do is they are keeping their channels live. So any following that they originally had, if they do move to another country or if they do like bring back their channel again, outside of Korea, they will be able to keep their same audience and do everything and so on and so forth. But I don't know if that remedies the situation. But I think that a lot of these people are going to be moving over to new platforms. I do think Kick is going to be big, or Bilibili, or other places that may have better server strength. But I don't know if this is going to be the only place where it will go. And then it will just keep moving. Like legislation will just keep hitting streaming platforms until it can no longer like be sustained, you know?
Sorry to derail your
no, it's totally fine.
Your topics with my question there.
No, it is another really big topic that a lot of people need to know about. It's just, it's unfortunate, but I do think that a lot of content creators are just going to switch platforms. I just think that that's just going to be the play. But yeah, back to not like social or like sad stuff. Creator Dodgeball. Creator Dodgeball World Championships happening on Sunday, December 10th at 1 p.m. So if you want to watch it, watch Ludwig and a bunch of his content creator friends so dodgeball at each other. Cool. We'll go from that one to another big event happening this weekend, and probably one of the biggest esports events happening this weekend. That is the Teamfight Tactics Vegas Open. This is the first ever Teamfight Tactics LAN or like world event that has like a like players essentially flying out to Vegas and playing to see who's gonna take home like kind of like the first ever championship for Teamfight Tactics. Most of it has been like under the radar. kind of like smaller events, but this is like the first like world event. In short, 512 players were invited to play. They will be playing over the course of 3 days, from December 8th to the 10th. And throughout each day, they're going to play, I think, somewhere between like 10 to 20 or like 10 to 15 games total. And whoever has the best win records out of those games will be moving forward until literally the final day. Day three essentially has only 8 players. Then it goes by placement, and the way how you win the final event is essentially if you get above fourth place, which is like per game, you get a certain amount of points. And whoever clears a certain threshold, which we don't know what that threshold is, it's probably like, I think it's probably like 20 or 25. You have to get at least 25 points to get there. And then once you clear that threshold, you have to get first in the lobby, which is kind of insane. In this last bit, they essentially have to watch all of these players like play really, really hard and then try to get this this final trophy. And essentially the trophy this time is probably the sickest trophy that I've seen in a minute. They're fighting over a WWE style belt.
Ooh.
And it's got like the Pengu on it. It says Team Fight Tactics. It's got the whole bells and whistles on it, because it is like a music themed one, like a music themed set. So it being in Vegas is really cool. And you know, the belt is probably something that you can keep on you for, you know, years to come. So it looks really cool. I'm not that good at TFT to be here, but it is like the first ever LAN. I would have loved to have been there this weekend or this upcoming weekend, but unfortunately, I cannot. But we also, on top of the TFT Vegas Open, which is kind of the biggest thing, they're playing for a share of $300,000. There's a little bit more in the prize, I think, closer to the end of it, but it's a lot of money on the table, especially for a big event. Yeah, the belt. The belt is probably the coolest part of the whole thing. For us players, there's a small patch, not a small patch, there is a patch that came out last night that changes the way how we play a lot of TFT. I'm not going to go over all the details because I don't need to like go into very specifics, but we will go over like the gist of like kind of what they're doing. The main thing is that 8-bit was a trait that was never played that much. They're getting buffed, and then a bunch of Heartsteel and a lot of Edgelord composition plays will be getting buffed as well. A lot of the 4-star units are getting a buff just because it takes them a little bit of time to get there. And then a couple of augments were increased in power. The main nerfs come to essentially like 4 specific spots, which is the country trait, the guardian trait, and the jazz trait were really, really strong in this last patch. They're going to be nerfing them down a bit. And then Ziggs. Ziggs is just, he was busted for a while. So they're hitting kind of these ones that were at the top and kind of snowballed way too quickly and didn't give a lot of players time to like adjust or be a little bit more fluent. And it gave all these ones that were at the bottom a little bit more of a buff so that it could hopefully stabilize the patch a little bit more. That is their first adjustment. This is the first one in 2 weeks. We got a new patch 2 weeks out. Just a little bit of a chance. And it's pretty cool. We also got a new what we call a treasured realm bounty, which is a essentially a roulette style like prize get thing. But it is more expensive than a regular one. Regular ones cost like 100 gems. This one's 450. But you get a chance, you get 50% chance of getting a essentially $20 tactician, which is like the little little character that you pilot throughout the game. Don't roll for it if you don't spend money to roll for it. If you have gems, you can do whatever you want. I'm not gonna stop you. But yeah, it's a really interesting thing that they're adding. It makes it so that you can have fun and get the characters that you want at a higher chance, but it does cost a little bit more in terms of currency. But yeah, that's what's new in TFT. If you guys do play a lot, let me know. I don't know if you guys play as much as me. I'm like addicted to it now. Okay, let's move from TFT to Pokemon Unite, moving to another video game that I have to keep a pulse on. This week, they introduced Meowscarada, the grass-type starter from Scarlet and Violet, is now in Pokemon Unite. It is an attacker, I believe. It's an attacker with a lot of really interesting mechanics, such as like being able to dash around, having like a pollen detonation ability, which can be cast from like a long distance. It looks like a really interesting Pokemon to play, and it's got a lot of like really interesting like mechanics and tricks up its sleeve. But I've yet to deep dive into it and like learn about it. But I know that there's also, this is the first time that Unite is doing a collaboration, not a collaboration, but like is working with Twitch. Unite will finally have Twitch drops. That's kind of cool. So this is like the first ever event that they're doing it. Your boy will probably end up streaming a little bit just to like help people out get their stuff when their favorite streamers are not online. And yeah, Meowscarada coming to the game. It's going to be free throughout this event, so you have to just you have to play quite a bit to get it, but that will be the way how to get Meowscarada. It's going to be the free Pokemon for like this wave of upcoming Pokemon. Cool. Let's talk about Fortnite. I don't usually cover Fortnite.
Fork knife.
Yeah, fork knife hit my feed for once, and I kind of have to mention this. So this weekend is also the Fortnite Festival, which is the one where they essentially have like an in-game concert, right? The lineup is kind of stacked if you haven't seen it.
I have not seen it.
Okay. let's see if I could pull it up. But it's like on, I know it's on their Twitter. Fortnite Festival. All right. To not spoil too much, they got a ridiculous amount of like popular peeps. I'll just go over a couple of them. The weekend is going to be there four times. The Killers, you have All American Rejects, you have Billie Eilish, you have Fall Out Boy, you have LMFAO, the White Stripes, you have Psy, you have One Republic. There's a whole bunch of other like people who are also on this list, which is ridiculous. But that is going to be an in Fortnite festival.
Why is that so stacked?
Yeah, it shouldn't be this stacked, but it is a stacked festival lineup for Fortnite. It's interesting to see that this is the step that they're taking, which I mean, good on them, but we'll see how it looks. And exactly what this Fortnite festival is. But it is just an in-game event that's going to be taking place on December 9th. So if you guys do want to capture it or want to see it, go for it. I don't even have Fortnite installed, so I got no
room on my PS5 for that.
Exactly. But we'll see if anyone else, usually like a YouTube video goes up immediately afterwards. So we'll see how it looks. And yeah, that's the Fortnite festival lineup. Just check their X, and if you like what you see, go ahead and check it out. Let us know how it goes.
Okay, last thing on the list. We go into the manga. Okay, yeah. Last thing on the list, we are going to go over the manga releases. There's only a couple of things that we need to mention. This week, we had Kaguya 27, we had Chainsaw Man 13, and then we had Blood on the Tracks 15. So just a couple of like really quick ones to knock out. And then next week, we have a couple of them that I'm just keeping tabs on. First one is Shy 5. I like Shy as a manga. It's about like all superheroes in our world, or like in the comic book world. All of them are like really extroverted. They're like representing a certain thing. Japan's hero is super shy, as the title calls, but has a very kind heart, but it's just not as like active as all the other heroes. So it's about how they're trying to balance their work and their life through being a superhero. So Shy 5, you have Akane Banashi 3, which is one of my favorite series right now, about Rakugo. I love Rakugo. And last but not least, you have Daemon of the Shadow Realm. This is a series done by the same author as Full Metal Alchemist, and they have their third volume coming out on the 12th. That is about it. That's what I have written down. Yep. That is it for the manga releases. So if there's anything that's on that list that like you're interested in picking up, make sure to go ahead and get it. I don't know if Barnes & Noble is doing their sale after Christmas, which they usually do, which is 50% off of all hardcovers. But if they do, I will let you guys know, because I will also be there trying to get hardcovers for manga. So yeah, that's how it is. And yeah, that wraps up everything that I have for this week.
Well, thank you all for tuning in with us. And Kevin, what's I'm trying to think of some applicable advice for this week. I can't think of anything.
You got go for one? It.
No, do you have one?
No. Do you have like a topic that you want me to go over?
How do you tell like what a good quality escape room is? Like, how do you know like the escape room that you're going to is like a good one? Considering now you're working at a second one now, and you've done a lot of puzzles in your time.
Okay. A good quality escape room just has puzzles that make sense. There shouldn't be anything that's in the game that confuses you and shouldn't lead you from one thing to another. Like everything should go, it like you go into a room, you should be able to identify things, and that should be able to lead to another thing, and so on and so forth. So I feel like that's the easiest way of saying it. Essentially, it comes down to props and how well puzzles are connected. But you can't tell that until you go into the room. But the best way to say is, like, if you like your game master, your rooms are going to be good. We're willing to help you out. We're not here to, like, we're not Jigsaw. We're not, like, mean people. We want you to escape. All game masters want you to escape. We want you guys to have fun. And then I guess, since we have a little bit of time left, the best thing to do, escape rooms are 60 minutes, right? If you have a rule of thumb, this is the play. Every 15 minutes, if you're looking at a puzzle and you're stuck on it for more than 5 to 7 minutes, ask for a hint. It's okay. Like, we put hard puzzles in there for a reason, and sometimes you just need a nudge in the right direction. So if you're stuck on a puzzle for more than 5 minutes, or more than 10 minutes even, usually 10 minutes is like where it starts stretching out a little bit. But if you ever get stuck, ask for a hint. We'd rather give you a hint and have you escape and have fun rather than you sit there and then like cry when everything is starting to fall apart, you know?
Yeah. Well, good to know. Thank you all for tuning in this week. Hope you... If you are deciding to go to an escape room, keep that in mind. Make logical sense and don't spend more than 10 minutes on a puzzle without a hint. Thanks, guys, for tuning in, and we will catch you next week. Adios.
Next week, we bring you the latest news and stories from around the internet.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to us and rate us 5 stars on all your favorite podcast platforms. You can also follow us on all social media at TwigPod, that's TwigPod, and feel free to send us any questions, comments, or any suggestions of topics you'd like us to cover. If you'd like to advertise with our show, please contact our network at Bleav.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week in Geek.